Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
Come on now. I mean, let's be realistic in life here.
Middays on the Score.
Oh, we can try. And one aspect of life is LOL Mets, which is
become as real as it gets, man.
Hashtag LOL Mets. And it was a nice job, I think, by Deadspin putting some of this stuff together of just about how bad it's gotten. The Mets are now 8 games below 500, and they keep losing games that they think they're going to win.
That's the mistake. They think they're going to win games. Yeah, doing that.
And there's a couple tweets embedded in here. This is the Elias Sports Bureau. It says, the Phillies completed a 4-game sweep of the Mets despite trailing by 2 or more runs in each game of the series. Over the last 35 seasons, the only other 4-game series sweep of this kind where a team trailed each game by 2 or more runs in a 4-game series and won all those games was April 2011. When the Rockies did so against the Mets at Citizens Field.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and then writer Tim Britton said, the Mets' peak win probabilities for those 4 games in Philadelphia. Monday's game, they had a 68.2% chance of winning at one point. Tuesday's game, an 86.1% chance of winning. Wednesday, 95%, and Thursday, 92.6%.
Oh, boy.
And they went 0-4.
You know, okay. That's hilarious, but also don't lose games to the Mets.
Right. So,
just for what it's worth.
Now, you remember that the controversy in Chicago for the Javier Baez homer was that Seth Lugo was left in by Mickey Callaway instead of going to Edwin Diaz, right?
Yes.
But in the world of the Mets, when no good deed goes unpunished, in came into the bottom of the ninth. You got this big home run by Todd Frazier, and the Mets were up. And then so they bring in, here's Diaz to finish it off. And Diaz comes in against the bottom of their order. He walks Cesar Hernandez. He gets one total out. He struck out JT Realmuto, who was pinch hitting. But that was sandwiched between 2 walks, a single, and 2 home runs, including a walk-off 3-run homer by Gene Segura to left field. So they had allowed 3 hits, 3 walks, and a run through 8, and wound up losing in 9. Okay?
Yeah.
Now,
perfect.
Watching as this is happening, while he's doing his radio program, is Mike Francesa. And this is what sports radio is all about right here. This was the Pope's reaction.
Segura hits a shot. Home run. Unbelievable! So this guy comes in and gives up 5 runs. That sums it up. Fire all of them. Don't even bring them back to New York. You know what? Let the bus go the other way, please. Tomorrow night, let the 69 Mets take the field. They do a better job against the Braves. This is unbelievable. There's Frazier hits one of the biggest home runs you could hit in your life. Kept the Mets alive. 2-1 Mets. They had an insurance run. 3-1 Mets. Go to the bottom of the ninth. They traded to get this kid, the great reliever. They bring Diaz in here. All he's got to do is get a rocking chair save against the bottom of the lineup. Walks the first batter, gives up a home run to the 8 hitter. And then gives up a 3-run jack to Segura on his 38th pitch or whatever the heck it was. He's done. He's shot. Bullpen shot. Team shot. Manager's shot. The pitching strategist. Who the hell knows what he does in the first place? Hey, you know what? Just listen. Let the Mets take the bus. Instead of coming north on a turnpike, Send it south. Let the 69 Mets suit up tomorrow night. This is a disgrace. I can't even believe it. You can't lose this game. They stink so bad you can't even make it up. 37-45. Diaz goes out and gives up two homers and five runs after Frazier hits the clutch home run of the year to keep this team breathing. You got to be kidding me. Get rid of all of them. They're a bunch of jokers. Alonso, I apologize.
Quit yelling.
Yeah, and the best part is at the end, he exempts Alonso.
Dank's pitch well.
Right? Alonso, I apologize.
Yeah, I'm not talking about you. Everybody but Alonso.
You're fine. You can
Everybody stay. But Alonso.
Fire all of them.
Except Pete Alonso. Did he want the 69 Mets to come back because he knew their names?
No.
Is that why he wanted the 69 Mets?
As far as I understand, because those of us who were of 1969 turning 50.
I was not of.
My guess is it's a 50-year celebration of that team, and yeah. So they've been top of mind. There's been a lot going on because it's the half century. And
they're a bunch of jokers.
So you try to take the fun out of a Francesa bit just then.
Well, no, I think that's the reason why, that they've been talking about him or they're being honored throughout the year. It's sort of like Bears 100 that we've been doing.
God, what a ridiculous team. But what?
But yes. Yes, he did.
But yeah, a little bit of that, too.
Unbelievable!
That is absolutely fantastic.
Isn't it? I mean, speaking of the Bears 100... I haven't had a chance to put this together formally yet.
Okay.
But tell me if let's play Am I a Bad Guy?
Okay.
And I don't know why I find this so entertaining. Because what the Tribune is doing, what Will Larkin and these guys are doing, they're doing such a remarkable job telling us about these players we've never heard of.
Remember, we talked with Rich Campbell when they announced that they were going to do the list, and there was a lot of hemming and hawing. There was hand-wringing at the Chicago Tribune sports desk about who was going to be where on this list.
But just some of these historic Bears going back to the 20s and 30s and 40s, and George Wilson today is one. Yesterday it was Jack Manders, who they called Automatic Jack. And we've heard the stories about the strength of Joey Sterneman and Lee Arto and Zuck Carlson, and we learned about all these people. And then I heard Terry Bors on the air the other day. He said he didn't know that Jim Dooley played. He said he only knew him as the failed head coach. He said, you know what? I don't know who he played, buddy. Hey, I don't know. But I am now a connoisseur of the epilogue paragraph.
Okay.
Or paragraphs.
All right. In the 100 write-up.
In the write-up that Will Larkin is doing and all these guys are doing. There's all this stuff about these anecdotes from their career. And it's like, he could knock out a Brahma bull. And you get stuff written by these old columnists about him, these great stories where he'd rip people's faces off. And then, because they didn't really make all that much money, they all re-entered civilian life.
Okay.
And then it's these last paragraphs where it's like, the Dolphins fired Wilson after the 1969 season and replaced him with Don Shula.
Sure.
Wilson stayed in South Florida and joined the construction and real estate industries. He moved back to Michigan for his final years and died in Detroit of a heart attack at 64 in 1978.
What?
But they all have these completely random paragraphs. And it's just like, entered the dry goods business and died of, he was eaten by squirrels at age 72.
Murdered and then set on fire while celebrating his birthday.
Enlisted in the French Foreign Legion. And was consumed by dysentery.
Yes, exactly. And there's each one of these. It's like there's all of these wonderful tales of derring do and Ledger Domain and their football career. These gridiron beasts. And then at the end, it's like, he became a notary public and died at age 74 of Legionnaire's disease.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't think something
about it where it becomes incredibly mundane at the end.
You might be surprised by this, but I don't think that in and of itself makes you a bad guy.
Okay.
I think so many other things could put you on that list, but I don't think that one does because it really is kind of a tale of a different time, isn't
it? Isn't it? Like, I don't know why. It is why I just find it interesting because it makes them so kind of normal.
We're looking through some of those old photos, like especially the guys who fought before the war, the first one. And
why were they fighting before the war?
they fought on the field before the war. They found that it's like a Spanish-American war.
That's a great question, Rick. Hell, there might be a war. We better start fighting.
Get in there. Got to train. No, I mean, these guys, if they played before the war, they look like children. I mean, they just look small and like a high schooler who's gone through a year of JV football looks now. It's incredible.
This was the article about Joey Sterneman, and they just talked about how strong he was. And they tell there's quotes from Grantland Rice about Joey Sterneman. And then it's after football, the Springfield native owned and operated the Sterneman Cast Iron Smoke Pipe Company, which made and installed pipes for incinerators.
Started his own business.
Died at age 88 in 1988 in Oak Park.
Guy saw market inefficiency.
Wait a second.
All those stoves need pipes.
Yeah.
Let's make them.
That incinerator doesn't have a pipe coming out of it. We're fixing that. By cracky. Right? It's just something I've been enjoying throughout this process when, you know, now these larger-than-life football players, they make $1 billion and they don't need to work anymore. These guys all had businesses.
Like, I don't think it makes you a bad guy. I don't. I don't think that does independently. I don't think that puts you on the list.
All right. Good.
You feel better about that or worse?
How about that? I mean, I'll always find something to feel horrible about if that makes you feel better.
Existential dread, George.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This segment brought to you by the Chicago Dogs. Tickets now on sale for the Chicago Dogs. Get in the game this weekend with Adult T-Shirt Giveaway Friday. Ooh, Adult T-Shirts. Best post-game fireworks on Saturday and Meet the Team Family Sunday. Tickets at thechicagodogs.com. The Chicago Dogs, baseball with everything.
Can I make a pitch to you real quick? We've got a couple of things to get to. You brought up some football. Olin Krutz was in with in four Mike Mulligan this morning, and a couple of comments from Olin. Oh man, that guy is. Did you see when we walked in here the packet of preparation that he'd put together for his show today?
It's like Doug Buffone stuff.
Olin Krutz had it must have been 15 pages stapled together. Only Olin is strong enough to drive a staple through that many pieces of paper, so you know he did it himself. And it's just the whole prep work for his show today. The guy, he didn't screw around. Like, he's here to play.
Are you guys odd that someone prepped well for their show?
Yeah, it's a little weird. I mean, we just kind of show up and turn the thing on. It's all, you know, I'm sure that's a great idea,
too. I was going to say, how's that
mirror looking? We have added some guests to the show today because, like I said, we're going to carry this thing. We're also going to be subbing for Lawrence Holmes on the Lawrence Holmes show today. So you've got us until 2 o'clock. It's going to be the 5-hour save. So Hub Arkish is scheduled to join us at 11:20. That'll be right after Jonah Carey at 11. At 11:40, it's going to be Radio.com Sports NBA insider Rick Bucher. He has a lot to say about NBA free agency, about what's going on with Kevin Durant and Kawhi Leonard, and the Bulls perhaps pursuing Malcolm Brogdon and what goes into some of these offer sheets. And the more I'm reading about it, it is a dicey game pursuing a restricted free agent. Unless you go full bore with an unbeatable offer, all you do is hamstring your other pursuits for like a week. So we'll see about that. Friday Fung at noon, Fails of July. We already have some emails coming in.
Do we? Excellent.
Somebody asked a question via text. Is it okay if the story is about... Mm-hmm, and I said yes.
Oh,
yes,
absolutely.
It is. We want
course.
That as well. So anything involving 4th of July that has something that went badly for you, we want to point fingers at you and laugh at you and with you. So we're going to do that. And there's even more. And how about Cookie Monster yesterday, by the way?
One of the greatest things I've seen at a ball game in years. In absolutely years. We've got audio from that. Olin Krutz had some things to say that I didn't expect him to bring up about the Chicago Bears coming season as well. Midday Midway coming up at 10:42. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You guys are tight. This funk band was kind of making the rounds on Twitter a couple of weeks ago, and I went down that rabbit hole, winding up with a band called Wolfpack, These guys are an offshoot of Volpec. I forget exactly. What's the name of this group again?
The All-Star Punks or whatever it was?
Fearless Flyers?
Fearless Flyers that are made up of some of the members of Volpec, and they are just amazing sort of jazz funk technicians.
These are the guys. You sent me these guys, and then I sent them to my brother, who is a music director. He's a band director at a high school in Minneapolis, and he's the kind of guy, you send him stuff like, oh, check out what I found. He's like, oh, yeah, I've been on these guys for 6 years, and they're totally cool.
Yeah.
Glad you found
them. I don't know why he sounds like a
thanks,
dying buddy. Sea turtle, but he does.
Hanging out.
So Olin Krutz was doing some work today and had some strong thoughts, didn't he?
Yeah, I thought so. This is Olin talking a little bit about the differences that he sees, and I think a little bit too on the expectation side of things in moving from Vic Fangio to Chuck Pagano as a Bears defensive coordinator. I'll let Olin explain himself. He doesn't need my help.
Ed Donatell and Fangio and that group they had, the details they played with. I mean, even when McManus came in and Callahan went down and Amos went down and DeAndre Houston came in for him, those guys were never out of position. They may have got beat physically, but mentally they never got beat. The adjustments Fangio made in the game, if you're a pure football fan like I am, and you turn the film on and you watch him play his chess match in the game, you can't help but be a huge fan. There's a reason he became the head coach for the Denver Broncos. And everybody in that locker room had the ultimate respect for their defensive coordinator, and I'm talking about the defense side of the ball, for the defense coordinator and or their position coach. And you could tell just by watching film how much they were together on everything they were doing, okay? So that level that they were playing at is because everything came together. Everybody knew exactly what the coaches were saying. Everybody knew exactly what the coaches
commitment,
wanted.
Strategy, chemistry.
They could communicate without speaking, right? So I know the adjustment that Ed Donatell, Prince Mukamura, I know what Ed Donatell wants me to do here before I even go to the sideline. So I got to get that done. I know what he wants from me. I didn't do it on that play. I better do it on this play. Eddie Goldman, Jay Rogers wants me on. I got beat. I missed my gap. I got it. Don't worry about it. I know what I got to do in this defense. That kind of communication takes time to build. That kind of respect takes time to build. It's like we talked about with Joe Maddon, right? As long as you're making me better. I don't care what you are, what you're doing. Put me in position to succeed. And that's what Coach Fangio and Ed Donatell and the whole defensive staff was doing last year. It was the perfect storm for what they had.
Now, that isn't necessarily any kind of disparagement of Chuck Pagano, but
not necessarily.
No, but it also is understanding what may take time to rebuild under any new regime.
I suppose when thinking about the changeover from Fangio to Pagano, I've kind of in my own head, and you tell me if you think I'm out over skis here or maybe just kind of missing something, but I think it's safe to assume that while there might be a step back in effectiveness or turnover rate, or even scoring to a certain degree, you know, defensive scoring, that just a sheer amount of athleticism from a guy like Khalil Mack, from a guy like Eddie Jackson, and the overall youth of the defense ought to keep you pretty tough, even if you fall down a couple of rungs in statistical production, right? I mean, if you're the fourth best, fifth
being
best.
Being good is being good at some point.
It feels that way to me. And I know you can't necessarily trust in that. Now, the variable here is you had a pretty healthy defense with the exception of obviously two impact players in Khalil Mack injured for a little while. It's, what was that, 3-5 weeks, something like that, where you didn't have 100% of Khalil Mack? Let's probably call it 5 weeks.
Yeah, Jets game, Dolphins game, Bills
bye week, Bills game, and then is he 100% healthy for the next one around? I don't know. You probably argue that he probably would say he's fine, but I think overall you look at the talent involved there and say you'll still be fine even if, like Olin's talking about, that attention to detail isn't quite as tightly as it was in years past with Fangio and Donatell, if only because terms are different, communication is different, and an understanding of assignment is a little bit different. I think I trust them to fill that kind of gap with talent and with, you know, just kind of sheer athleticism.
I remember vividly when Buddy Ryan was out and Vince Tobin was in, and there was a different philosophy with how he was going to deploy some of those resources, and their defense statistically improved, but something was different. Something changed.
Yeah.
It was never quite the same when Buddy walked out that door. Vince Tobin knew what he was doing, and he still had all those same guys and all that immense talent, but the risk calculus was different. What he asked him to do was different. It felt different.
Well, you bring something interesting up there, the risk calculus part of things. I don't know how you feel necessarily about Buster Skrine or HaHa Clinton Dix and their willingness to take some risks or, you know, put more bluntly, have penalties called against them, you know, make plays and be more physical up early in the line of scrimmage, thinking about Buster Skrine specifically here. But that guy got flagged a lot for a lot of contact inside and outside, you know, the preferred 5 yards. Like, this is a guy who has gambled and has gotten flags thrown at him, whether that's because of a little bit of a lack of coverage skill or lack of confidence or being asked to do a lot more than just play corner, just play the inside corner spot. I don't know. But if this defense is then going to say, in order to make up for some of the attention to detail, some of the cohesiveness that it's had over the last couple of years, we are going to gamble a little bit more, then I could kind of see for sure where you start looking at this defense saying, man, do you always need to swing for the home run like this? Keep it in front of you. Be a little bit more of a keep it in front of you defense as opposed to gunning for turnovers the way Clinton Dix can.
Yeah, in a lot of ways.
At least his reputation leads him to.
This is the converse of the Ryan Tobin move of going from high risk, high reward to lower risk, medium reward. Because this guy, Pagano, we know is more aggressive. He's going to blitz more often. So this is going to be something new where maybe it's like, yeah, we'll turn him loose. And then, of course, we got to hear the new outside linebackers coach say they're going to drop Khalil Mack into coverage.
I don't want to hear that anymore.
Yeah, don't do that. You're doing it wrong.
Well, isn't that the thing, though? I mean, regardless of what you end up with on defense from a philosophy, the takeaways and whatnot, you should be able to rest assured that a pass rush is going to get there more often than other defenses in the NFL. And if you do that, good things come.
But you're right in that the fact that Olin went in as specifically as he did, naming not just Vic Fangio, but Ed Donatell, the fact that Ed Donatell was quick to leave. It wasn't like he was going to stick around and try to take that shot at coordinating things, that he knew that he wanted to be elsewhere when Vic was somewhere else. You know, Cody Parkey, sorry, but Cody Parkey makes that kick.
All roads go back to it.
He makes that kick. John Elway's not going to wait for Vic.
That is...
John Elway was impatient. He was in a hurry. He wanted to act. He would have hired Mike Munchak. Vic Fangio would still be here.
I think that's probably...
offense could have been better in that game, too.
Well, I'm not relitigating the reasons why they lost the game, but the fact is...
But to boil it down to just
That was it. That was make the kick, win the game. Had he made that... My point is, regardless of how they got there, had he made the kick, Vic Fangio would still be here.
I'm just saying, the offense being as bad as it was late, got Parkey was the best thing to happen to that offense because it took all the blame off of them for not being good.
But he still missed the kick.
I'm not saying he didn't.
Right. Had he made the... It's just a fact. Regardless of how they got to that point, had he made the kick... Vic Fangio would still be here. We wouldn't be talking about it.
See, now you're just bringing me back to the biggest focus that I've got on next season for the Bears, and it's score 24 a night. I mean, that's just what this is.
Yep.
The offense has to take that step, because if you've baked in, like I have, a little bit of regression to the Bears' defense, if only because they're not likely to be as healthy as they were all season last year, and if you've baked in a little, you know, some improvement by the Vikings or by Green Bay or even by, well, the hell with the Lions, but, you know, the Vikings or Green Bay, then you're dealing with a couple extra wins that came your way last year that may not be there next season. You've got to score 24 points. The offense just has to be that much better. What was it, like 17 and change last season from the offense? It needs to be more than that.
And the 7-7-3 says, you don't think Vic would go to some other team? Come on, man. No one else wanted him. He wasn't a candidate anywhere else.
Yeah, it was. There was an interview request that got withdrawn. Was it the Jets?
There was
an interview request that got withdrawn.
Right. That was it.
That was it for Vic.
That was it. The only team that ended up officially continuing with an interview request was the team that hired him. So that was that.
And then they gave him Joe Flacco.
Yep.
Best of luck, Vic. I love him. I really do. I hope that works. But my God, man, when you've been paired with Joe Flacco on the other side of that football, God go with you.
So did we have the all-time stretch sung yesterday at Wrigley Field?
One of the best I've got it is, you know, it's the vintage Harry Carey because the man invented it. You can't take it away from him. Everything you want to say about the guy and the caricatures that have been created from Harry Carey, and other, fine, you could do that. But that guy created it. For me, yesterday's seventh inning stretch, but Sesame Street was like right there for me.
I believe that's also started in 1969. Another great thing from the summer of 69.
It's that old.
Nice. You know,
nice.
Then we had the moon landing. You know, we had the fact that I was
July 20th, 1968.
You had the Miracle Mets, who are, by the way, being feted. Not feted, but they are being fethead.
They are feted.
At Citi Field this weekend. That's why he's talking about the 69 Mets.
Makes sense.
In that rant. But I think 69 was also Sesame Street. And there he was. There was Cookie Monster. And he was in the booth, and he was singing.
And the Cookie Monster is going to be the guest conductor. I never really thought I would say that, but here he is, the Cookie Monster. It's the 50th anniversary of Sesame Street.
Friends, today, C is for Cubbies. Yeah, all right. Let me hear you, Gary. A one, a two, a three. Take me out to the ball game. Take me out to the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. Me not care if me ever get back for its root. Root, root for the Cubbies. If they don't win, it's a shame. For it's one, two, three strikes you out at the old ball game. Let's get some cookies.
And did you see what was going on in the press box, too?
Oh, my God, of course.
How many reporters who have young kids or grandkids or nieces and nephews and wanted to take that picture.
Or just have a sense of nostalgia and respect for one of the greatest television characters of all time, Cookie Monster?
I have met Cookie Monster,
you
actually.
You met Cookie Monster?
Yeah, it was a charity dinner. I was lucky enough to be invited by somebody who bought a table at this nice charity dinner. And the keynote speaker was Cookie Monster.
Oh.
And it was amazing. Because that's still Cookie Monster. You know, that's... And here is... You know, David Rudman is there with the puppet, the Muppet, and he's...
Puppet?
It's a Muppet, and he's doing the thing.
I don't get it.
And you know it's a guy. You know it's a middle-aged Jewish man from Highland Park High School who's standing there doing this.
Yeah,
and yet, it doesn't matter. You're still enthralled.
Did you tell him you don't have carbs before dinner? I just take the fun out of cookies for him?
But it's really weird because it's the Cookie Monster is talking, and you know that it's a person.
Yeah,
you know, you're not an idiot.
Well.
He's standing right there. You're talking with him, and yet you're still looking at the Muppet and listening to the Muppet and acting as if that is a real sentient other being there.
Z is for Cubbies.
There's the picture. It's Cookie Monster.
I know, but there's
there in the booth.
There's a person underneath.
That's Cookie Monster.
Spoiler alert.
Yes, yeah, sorry.
Cookie Monster predates Sesame Street. Like I guess he was getting kicked around a little bit by Henson. The original design for the Cookie Monster goes back to 66. So he's like, I mean, he's like legit old school Sesame Street guy.
Well, and also David Rudman is not the original Cookie Monster, obviously, because he would have been too young. He graduated high school in 81. So he took it over and has become the modern Cookie Monster.
Hmm.
Although isn't Big Bird still Big Bird?
Carol
Spinney?
Yeah, I think
in his
80s. I was looking through the IMDb sheet trying to find out exactly what the run of show was for Sesame Street. It's 50th anniversary, obviously. But yeah, I think I think Carol Spinney is the guy. No, 2018 was his last. Well, the 2019 Sesame Street season hasn't started yet. The new one's come out later. So maybe he's setting up.
Right. The league year starts point, I believe.
When do the salary caps roll over the Sesame Street cast?
You can put in an offer. There's a legal tampering period, where there's legal Muppet tampering before the 2019 season starts.
But it's like Spinney and Frank Oz. Like, those are your max guys. Those are your max contracts on Sesame Street. You're not going anywhere with them. I mean, they're staying right there.
I can't believe that guy was Big Bird into his 80s. Like, that guy's 10 years older, 11 years older than Terry.
He is Carol. He's
Carol Spinney retired last year. I remember his name being in the news. He retired.
Yeah, maybe Terry should take over as the next Big Bird once he recovers from his back surgery. Hey, buddy, I got a book on my head.
It's actually a good cover if you want to basically be Bubble Boy. I mean, just stay in that thing all the time and you're set. Nobody really questions it.
That's true.
That's true.
That's absolutely true.
Who's going to argue? Who's going to question?
I like Terry in the suit. My feathers are falling off. Buddy, my beak's too long and I don't know what the hell I'm doing.
They have to bleep Sesame Street.
What's wrong with Big Bird? I don't know.
Giving the kids a real education here.
Why does he smell like Captain Black? This segment was sponsored by Hint Water. Hint is pure, still, or sparkling water infused with a variety of fruit essences, including watermelon, blackberry, and cherry. No sugar, no sweeteners, no calories. Available in your local grocery store or at drinkhint.com. Hint, mouth-watering water.
The Midday Midway is on the way. I have a documentary that's on the way that we're going to have to watch, A Tale of Randy Cicadas, and a follow-up to one of my favorite Midday stories of the last 6 weeks or so.
Randy Cicadas was one of my favorite Cubs of the early 70s. I have a dog eating things it's not supposed to eat, but being about as dog as a dog can be.
Okay.
Also, with this heat wave that we've got, I've got some warnings for you because there is a concurrent heat wave across the pond. And there's an article here warning of things that can happen to you during a heat wave, one of which is summer penis. And you need to know. You need to know.
Like the song from Grease?
About. You need to know about summer penis.
The Midday Midway is on the way. You'll get educated. Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
The first half or the second half, you know, they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
It's been lively, and this is close to the Midway of the Bernstein and McKnight show, but not really close to the midway of our time on the air today because Lawrence Holmes is out sick, so we are going to be in late notice. We're going to handle the Lawrence Holmes show until 2 o'clock today, but it's the usual midday midway of our show, and we talked about a ton of things. A lot of stuff about the Cubs game. We had Cookie Monster, we had Olin Krutz on the Bears and football things. We played a little bit of Am I a Bad Guy?
Not for this.
And
ice cream trucks, obviously, covered
that. Sure.
Listen, it's heating up. You got to get your protocol right.
The Mets getting swept and the Mike Francesa meltdown was just absolutely classic stuff.
Hat tip to Jay Zawoski for this one. He sent me this story a little earlier in the morning. It's from sciencealert.com, and the headline reads, "Fungal hallucinogens send cicadas on sex binges after their genitals fall off." In the latest gruesome nature news, scientists have discovered new details on a fungus that compels its cicada hosts to mate long after their genitals have gone and their bodies have turned to what one researcher colorfully describes as flying salt shakers of death.
It's Terry.
Hey, buddy.
The fungus effects and its effects read like an abstinence campaign for cicadas, but it also appears that it affects sex-crazed cicadas by sending them on one heck of a drug trip. One team of researchers from the U.S. has analyzed the biochemistry in periodical populations infected with the fungus, finding evidence of a plant-associated amphetamine and a psychoactive chemical found in magic mushrooms.
Eating all these. What, psilocybin?
That is actually. It doesn't say whether it's psilocybin or not.
The drug.
That's
drug and magic mushrooms.
But there are other mushrooms that carry other hallucinogens than just psilocybin. That's the one that's most closely associated with potentially medical effect for humans. I don't know if it's this one that necessarily affects the cicada, but how about that?
It's going to be like cane toads where people are going to go try to find these flying salt shakers of death and eat them.
Naturally, it's going to be featured in a follow-up on Leftovers where I try and find dead cicadas that have been attacked by fungus so you and I can just get high on a weird drug.
Okay, I will. I have already, live on the air, eaten live cicadas. So that's not even really a bit.
Is that even...
The last time, I forgot what year it was. Was it
06? I've said it so many times.
87, was it 0, you know, 04? Whatever year it was, we were at Cork and Kerry outside during the cicada infestation.
Yeah.
And there have been all sorts of recipes and all sorts of news stories about how to eat them. And it was, you wouldn't eat one. I said, sure, bring me your cicadas. I'll eat them. And I just pick, you know, pull the wings off, pop them in my mouth. And they're fabulous. They taste like little fingerling potatoes.
Oh.
Yeah, you're new here?
Well. Oh.
All right, heat wave across the pond. How the heat wave affects your body. That is the story from the Scottish Sun, because we have a similar heat wave here where it's going to be hot for a while. So there's a lot of things that can come with it, where you can have the blood flow closer to the surface of the skin, your ankles swell. So ankle swelling, fluid retention, more visible in skinny areas like your ankle. There's chafing, sweating, eczema, asthma, heat stroke. This kind of sounds like the I'm Fat podcast.
Yeah, that's my mile walk to work.
Heat exhaustion, dehydration, fainting. And then there is summer penis.
Okay. That was my prom date, summer penis.
this is a thing, apparently, that when it's hot, this is how it's explained to the Scottish Sun.
Uh-huh. Wait, the Scottish Sun?
Yes. The Scottish Sun!
They got a representative population to test this? I'm just saying.
Yeah, spoken like a true Irishman. On the subject of expanding blood vessels, they say men can reap an unlikely reward from the heat. Summer penis refers to one's pride and joy appearing bigger in the heat.
Ah.
It is essentially the opposite of what happens when you're cold. They talked to Dr. Sarah Jarvis, who said technically, when you're hot as well as when you're excited, your blood vessels may expand. When blood vessels on the surface are a bit bigger, things are going to look a bit bigger. But she warns, it's not growing. It's just your blood vessels growing slightly larger as a way to reduce heat. And no, she adds, taking the fun out of summer penis, no, it's not going to make you perform better either.
I just got back inside. It doesn't work.
Well, thanks, Doc.
You remember Mickey Polk? He was featured on the Midday Midway about 3 weeks ago.
Mickey Polk.
Mickey was the Alabama man who authorities say was keeping an attack squirrel in a cage and
hopping it
up on methamphetamine to make sure that that the squirrel was attacking correct people. Well, Mickey put out a video on Facebook flatly denying any accusations of mething up a squirrel for attack purposes or otherwise. However, I think our story has come to a close on Mickey Polk. He was busted Thursday night when authorities conducting surveillance at a local hotel spotted him leaving on a stolen ambulance. I want to be clear here. On a stolen ambulance. Polk was booked into the Lauderdale County Jail on drug and gun charges. He has additional charges of attempting to elude, criminal mischief, receiving stolen property, and a felon in possession of a pistol. Police were on the hunt since June 18th when authorities raided his apartment and then rescued the bushy-tailed critter. I didn't realize that when Polk filmed the video on Facebook and put it out there that, no, I'm not hopping this squirrel up on meth, I didn't realize he was on the lam while he was doing the video and sending it out. I had no idea.
He was on the squirrel, on the lamb, and on the ambulance.
They seized meth, drug paraphernalia, and body armor. So this guy was...
Wow.
Yeah, this guy was pretty dangerous. Unfortunately, the sheriff's office has said that there is no safe way to test the squirrel for meth, so we are still left without a decisive ruling on whether or not he was mething the squirrel.
Now, you are a dog owner, whether you like it or not. You have a dog. I am
involved in the raising of a dog. Yes.
You have a dog. I had a dog, and my dog was kind of dumb and ate everything.
It's a dog.
And ate odd things all the time, and you knew if something was missing, even if it wasn't food, it was probably eaten by the dog. And one of the best reasons to have a dog is that they lick up crumbs, and if you have hardwood floors, it's kind of nice, even though you hear them clicking around all the time, that they will make sure there's never any crumbs anywhere. Well, our late dog has been outdone here. Wellington, Ohio. Every owner will tell you dogs eat the darndest things, but even veterinarians were surprised when they x-rayed a local dog's bloated belly. It was a shock to everybody, said Lori, the dog's owner. It was cool to see an x-ray like that, but when it's your dog, it's a little scary.
Yeah.
The 4-year-old golden retriever Finnegan had gobbled down loads of decorative rocks from the family's backyard.
Oh, no.
Very small rocks. They estimated at least 5 pounds of rocks. His stomach was full. His intestines were full. They were all throughout him. And when you understand how this happened, if you know dogs, you are going to respond, oh, yeah, well, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Because it happened during a backyard barbecue.
Mm-hmm.
Lori learned that one of their children had dumped something onto the rocks. They were making tinfoil poached shrimp packs. And the kids were dumping the liquid from those packs, the butter and the savory juices from the grilled shrimp onto those rocks.
Makes sense.
The next morning, Lori found a pile of rocks inside the house near the back door. And there were many more when Finnegan went outside for the morning constitutional. They started coming out of both ends, said Lori. And it so happens that she works at the Wellington Veterinary Clinic. So she brought him into work. Said surgery was definitely an option, but because the rocks were slowly moving and Finnegan was being closely monitored, they opted for a high-fiber diet and medications to treat nausea and protect his intestines, and they got him safely through this. The very last of the very small rocks.
I'm really glad.
The shrimp-flavored rocks made it out, and Finnegan is apparently fine. And according to PetMD, the most common non-food objects eaten by pets are socks, underwear, pantyhose, rocks, balls, chew toys, corn cobs, bones, hair ties, and sticks, and members of sticks.
That is the Midday Midway. We do it every day here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Yeah, I don't know. They let us. It's really weird.
Yeah.
We've got lots to do in the 11 o'clock hour. We will have our customary visit with Jonah Carey in just a few minutes. Hub Arkish is going to swing by and hang out and talk football with us. Rick Bucher, who is the NBA insider for Radio.com Sports, will be with us at 11:40. You'll be with us, too. And remember, we've got our Fails of July, or Independence Day Tales.
Yep. Some great emails coming in for Friday Fung that we're doing today at noon.
That's right. That's all coming up with the Bernstein McKnight Show, 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.